Thank you for listening to the Breakthrough Podcast. We hope you are encouraged by the message. Be sure to stick around for more at the end.
James chapter 4, verse 13 through 17 says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such town and spend a year and trade and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time, then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin." Dear Father, I thank you, God, for the reading of your word. I thank you for this time we can come together to grow in your word. And God, I pray right now, Lord, that you would just use me as a vessel for you. Use me to speak to these young people, God, and to speak to myself. And Lord, I pray that you would just open our eyes, Lord, and we would be able to see you in all of your glory and understand your word. God, open our eyes right now, Lord. Reveal something to us. In your name I pray. Amen. Y'all can be seated. So, when I was in the second grade, I wanted to be one thing when I grew up. One thing, and that was a spy. A secret agent. That's what I wanted to be more than anything in the world. And not just any spy or secret agent. I wanted to be Ethan Hunt. And some of you probably don't know who that is, and that's a shame, but you probably don't know who it is. Ethan Hunt was played by Tom Cruise in the movie Mission Impossible, the first one. And he was just this awesome, he was an American agent. He wasn't like James Bond, this British guy. It wasn't like that. He was this American agent. He was so cool. He was the guy I wanted to be. And so I spent my afternoons in elementary by myself at my house, running around, jumping off beds, acting like I was jumping out of airplanes, rolling around, sneaking around my house, you know, playing theme music with my mouth like I was in the movie or something like that. Well, in the movie Mission Impossible, there's one particular scene that's really, really awesome. And what happens is Ethan has to break into this room, and he has to get on a computer and steal some information. But the thing of it is, this room is like guarded with like lasers, and like they're like moving lasers, and it's crazy. And so this is how he gets in. He goes in from the top, and what he does is he takes a ceiling tile out and like harnesses himself together with like this rope, and he like is like suspended like a bird or something, and he's like dodging the lasers and like going down through the middle of this room. And he gets to the bottom, and he has to like swing toward this keyboard and get on the keyboard, like hold on and like type in this stuff and steal this whatever it was. And I remember thinking that was the coolest thing ever. So I had this bright idea one day while I was pretending to be Ethan Hunt from Mission Impossible that I would do that scene. So I got some resistance bands, some like you know, like exercise bands, like you know, use like you. Yeah, resistance bands. And I had this big bookcase in my room. When I say it's a big bookcase, I'm talking about it went all the way to the ceiling. And it's bolted to the wall, so it's safe. So I tie that up to the top of the thing, and then I climb up there and then tie the resistance band around my waist. And I'm going to suspend myself off of this bookcase, and this is how big of a nerd I was. I had this little, like, fake laptop thing, and I had it sitting on my bed. And I was going to swing over and act like I was doing the exact same thing. I was interacting this movie out play by play. Well, I get up there, and I do it, and I lean off, and believe it or not, I'm suspended in midair. And I'm, like, hanging, and it's, like, it's holding me. And it's, like, the coolest thing ever. So I'm like, okay, now I have to swing over to the laptop. So I'm, like, getting my momentum going. I swing over, and the bookcase was not bolted to the wall like I thought it was. And the bookcase comes falling down, traps me in between my bed and the bookcase, and like books are hitting me in the back of the head, and like it's like a nightmare. Like I'm scared, like my whole life flashes before my eyes. And I realized I didn't have any friends at that point, and I was going to die lonely. But the only point of that story, it really doesn't go anything with what we're going to talk about other than this. Things don't always go as you plan. That's the theme of that whole entire story. I just wanted to share that story with y'all. Things don't always go as planned. I planned to have this really cool moment in my room that I would remember for years to come. And it turned out to be just this disaster that I got in a lot of trouble about because I tore some stuff up. But things don't always go as planned. And that's a funny story. But if we go on a serious note, we all can relate to times where things catch us off guard. Like just stuff that is not supposed to happen just happens. Like family members being diagnosed with terminal illnesses, or friends having car accidents and dying or being seriously injured, or even, you know, the kid from Nanawaya that was just enjoying another day at football practice and, you know, broke his neck, and thank God that it wasn't as bad as it could have been. He very easily could have died or could be paralyzed. But the point is, you don't always know what's going to happen. You don't know what tomorrow holds. You don't know what, you know, the next 15 minutes holds in this room even. We can assume, but we don't know for a fact. And that's kind of the theme of what we're going to talk about tonight. Ben Stewart has a book out, and in his book, he tells a story about him and his wife. They went to Starbucks. He was speaking at a conference to teenagers, like when we go to camp or conference, that kind of thing. He was speaking at a conference, and they decided to go to Starbucks. And they got to Starbucks and got whatever they were getting, and they were sitting down, and these two kids run by and grab his wife's iPhone and take off running out of Starbucks. So he said he's sitting there, and he's kind of caught off guard, and his wife yells, "Ben, get him!" So he's like, "Oh yeah." So he jumps up and takes off running after him. He gets outside. They jump in an SUV and take off. He chases them down and the window's down, and he jumps onto the running board of the SUV and is hanging on to the inside of the window and on the running board, and they're going down through the middle of the town. And they're going like 35, 40 miles an hour. Like, he's holding on for dear life. And he said the ironic thing about it, he's talking to these guys like they're having a conversation. He's like, they're like, "What are you doing, man? Are you crazy?" And he's like, "No, you get my wife's phone." And they're like, and he said they were calling him sir and stuff like that. And he said it was really weird. But he said he got to a point where he realized they wasn't going to stop. And he had two options: either crawl into the vehicle with them through the window or let go. That was his only two options, because they were just speeding up, and they wasn't stopping. So he knew that something had to happen. So he decided to let go. He let go and rolled, you know, down the street. Got up. He was fine. He was good. He was all good. The next day, he got to notice there's a pain in his lower back, and he was kind of stove up, and he just didn't think nothing about it. But about a week later, he got to where he couldn't even walk. All he could do was lay there. He couldn't even move his legs. And so he went to the doctor, and turns out he had three herniated discs in his back, and he had some severe stuff going on. And he went to one surgeon, and this one surgeon was like, "Listen, Ben, I'm just going to tell you the truth." He said, "You have three herniated discs in your lower back. Any surgery we try to do, any option we run there, is going to run the risk of destabilizing your spine, which could lead to future problems. You need to cancel all your speaking engagements that you have planned out for the next year or so. You need to find someone else to do your job at your church, because you won't be able to do it anymore." Then he said, "I doubt that you will even be able to hold your new baby girl," because his wife was expecting, like within like a couple of weeks. And he said, "I doubt you will even be able to hold your baby girl when it comes down to it." And he said, "And also, you probably will never be able to use your legs again because of this problem that he had." And Ben said it like this. He said, "So a simple trip to Starbucks turned into a month of being pumped full of drugs and lying on the floor of my living room. All my plans crumbled like a house of cards due to this unforeseen incident. Suddenly, I realized that with unwavering clarity, I don't have nearly as much control over my life as I thought I did just a few short days ago." And the thing, that's true for all of us, guys. Even tonight, we have these plans, and we have these ideas about our lives. But the thing of it is, guys, nowhere is it guaranteed that tomorrow will conform to whatever we expect. Whatever we expect to happen in the future, it's nowhere does it say is a guarantee that tomorrow will conform to that. And that's what James is talking about, because James is talking to these people, and in verse 13 he says, "Come now, you who say today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit." James begins this passage with a loud bang. I know it doesn't sound like a loud bang, but this where he says, "Come now," that statement, like in their day, would be like, hey, listen up, right here. Listen to what I have to say. That's what he was doing when he got their attention here. So he's wanting to grab their attention. That's what he does. He says, listen, listen up. Listen to what I have to say. And James is trying to grab these people. And what it was these people were coming in and they were going city to city and they were bragging about how much money they were making. They were bragging about, and they were arrogant about how we're going to go to this town next week or next month we're going to go to this town. We're going to spend a year there and we're going to make this much money. And these were Christian, they were believers. But he's calling them out and saying, who are you to say what you're going to do and what you're not going to do? You're not in control of your life. God is. And what he's going to do is he's going to lay it out for us. And that kind of seems crazy. Like, I know that, you know, from the time you're born, you're told, okay, make sure you have a plan. Make sure you have a game plan. Make sure your life's planned out. And it's good to plan. And he's not against planning at all. But there's a way to do it. And we're going to get into that in a little bit. But there's a way to do it. So, sure, you may not be businessmen in this area this time. But it does relate back to us because if you've ever said, I'm planning on going somewhere or I'm planning on doing something, and when I get there, I plan on being there for a certain period of time and I plan on making this happen here, some kind of outcome happen. If you've ever said that, then he's talking to you. So if you've ever said, I'm going to go to college and pursue a degree in such and such, he's talking to you. He's talking to me because we've all said things like that. Now, again, he's not getting on to you for making plans. We're gonna dive into that in just a second. But the problem is, there's a failure in these people. What they were doing, they had a failure on perspective. They had a failure on the way they looked at life and the way they looked at God. And he's gonna iron out the perspective and show us the right way to look at life and the right way to look at God. And when we get through that, it's gonna just make a lot of sense. And it's gonna be like, hey, you're right, James. You got it going on. James is a smart guy. So they have a distorted picture of life and God. In verses 14 and 15, he's going to take care of that and show us what we need to listen to. So verse 14 says, Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. James first corrects the failure to see ourselves rightly. He identifies two errors in perspective on how we view life. I said there was two things. We view life wrong, we view God wrong. There's two things in the way we view life that he's gonna break down here. And the first one is, we don't know what tomorrow holds. When we look at life, we don't know what tomorrow holds. We may think we do, but we really, really don't. We can meet the one that we're going to settle down and marry one day, or we could get hit by a bus. We really don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. Am I right? Yes, we don't know. So that should bring some humility to our lives. We've been talking about being humble the past few weeks. That in itself, not knowing what tomorrow is going to hold, knowing that you're not in control of that, should make you a little humble if you have a big head about things, knowing that you're not in control. But that's not even the main problem here. The second part of verse 14 is what we're going to hit on. It says, James asked them a question. He says, what kind of life do you have exactly? What quality of life do you have? And before they can even answer, or before we can even give an answer, he tells them exactly what kind of quality of life they have. He says, for you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. And that's the second problem we have with life. When we're looking at life, we don't realize how fragile it is. We don't realize how just short life really is. Do y'all remember the air freshener things? Like you set them and you put like a timer, like it's like 5, 10, 15 minutes, and like randomly they would just be like, poof, and shoot mist up in there. Do y'all remember those? Yeah, it's made by Glade. Shout out to Glade. But anyway, we used to have one, and Heidi decided to put it right on the ledge when you first walk in our door, and it never failed. I timed it perfect. Every time I came in the house or was leaving the house, right when I go to grab the doorknob, that thing was, poof, and it scared me to death. But the point is, like, when those things happen, when they went off, when they, psh, you look at it, and oh, it's a mist. That's kind of cool. And it was gone. And that's what James is comparing to. He said, you're like a mist. You're like nothing. He said, you're like a little bit of smoke that comes up, and you see it, and then it's gone. That's how our lives are. That's exactly, the human life is a short time period. We think of it as a long time, but he's saying, no, it's not. And just to show you how short it really is, I want everybody to think back 5 years ago. Just 5 years ago. You know, what was the most awesome thing you owned 5 years ago? What was the most popular thing going on 5 years ago? What did you wear 5 years ago? So think about that for a second. And now think about this. Does any of that really even matter anymore? Nah, it doesn't. It doesn't matter anymore. Most of y'all were playing on a jungle gym 5 years ago. Some of you were about to start high school. Some of you are about to start middle school. I mean, like you're all at different points. But the point is, think about this. Think about this for a second, guys. That's just 5 years ago. That's really not very long ago, but yet, here you are. You're grown up now. You're growing up. 5 years, it seems like think about a lifetime compared to eternity. Think about how much has happened over 5 years and how much of that doesn't matter right now to you. Think about living your whole life, and think about if you live for the world and you pursue what's popular and what's cool and all this kind of stuff, think about a whole lifetime added up to an eternity. It's going to be like nothing. There's a priority system here we're fixing to dive into on what life really is, and you're growing up and you realize that you're going to start realizing that life is really fast. For you seniors that are in here, you're probably, you know, high school's over. I mean, you got like another few months, and it's going to be over. And y'all going to be in college, and then you're going to turn around, and you're going to be at a job, and you're like, whoa, where'd college go? It's fast. It's going by fast, and it's because we're like a mist. It's just, we're here for a moment, and we're gone. So that brings up the question, what does that have to do with planning? What does having a short life have to do with planning anything? What does that have to do with anything? Does that mean we shouldn't plan? Oh, we shouldn't plan at all because short life? No. But it does give us some information on when you're planning, how to prioritize your life to what really, truly matters. Because if you realize you have a short life, then you realize I need to get what truly matters in priority, in check, and live that out. Because this is how we treat life right now. And this is going to be just like this is y'all are going to understand this. This is how we treat life. I got to make good grades. I got to graduate. I got to go to college. I got to race to get my degree fast as possible so I can get a job and then I can make money. Then I can get married. Then I can have kids so they can get a good education. So they can get a job. So they can make money. So they can raise some kids. And so they can get an education. So they can get a job. So they can make money. So they can have some kids. And it's just a hamster wheel of like, oh, we got to do this. You got your heads fixated on this thing. Called life, and what happens is, in the middle of this, trying to worry about education and making money and getting a job and finding somebody and having kids and raising them, and you have all this planned out. But here's the thing: where in any of that was God? Where in any of that was God? And that's the way, because here's the problem: we fixate on what's going on right now. We have our head down. We're, you know, like running sprints. We have our head down. We're running, and we're not even looking. And what James is going to tell us is, hey, look up and see the big picture. And this is the big picture. You're all going to die one day. Me too. Everybody in this room, unless the Lord comes back, will die. You ain't going to escape it. It's going to happen. It's a reality we all have to face. The Puritans, they used to build their cemeteries right in the middle of town. That seems kind of morbid. But this is what they always did. You know why? Because each day, whenever they got up and they seen the cemetery, they would realize that one day I'm going to be there. And God blessed me with another day on this earth, and I'm not there right now. And it made them appreciate the day and realize that this is a gift. That this day is a gift, and tomorrow is not promised. And they could very easily be in that cemetery. And our society today wants to push that away. Because we want to put cemeteries, we want to hide them. We don't want them in the middle of town. We want to hide them in places all... People don't want to talk about death, think about death. But it's a reality that we're all going to face one day, and it's all going to, and that reality should affect the way we live our lives. It should make us want to love the broken. It should make us want to, you know, go out and help the widows and the orphans. It should help us want to be an encourager, be kind to strangers, and live a life that matters, that it's worth living. Have a prioritized life. And the thing of it is, we can end this message right now, and this isn't even a Christian message. I haven't even talked to anything really right now about God. This is not even really a Christian. Right now we've covered life is short, cherish it, and get your priorities in line. We could have watched The Bucket List or listened to I Hope You Dance, and we could have got the same message accomplished. So James doesn't stop there, so we're not going to stop there. We're going to move on. Verse 15, he says, instead you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. He said, instead. This ties together verse 15 and 13. At the beginning of that, he said, you who say that you're going to this town and this town. He said, this is what he's doing. He's saying, listen up, guys. Listen up. Listen up. Don't give me this. Don't be saying that you're going to go to here or there. And don't do that. Don't do that. Instead, this is what you ought to say. He says, you ought to say, if the Lord wills. if the Lord wills. And James is not asking us to be legalist to where we say, well, I'm going to go drink me a Coke in a minute. If the Lord wills, I'm going to, when I get home, I'm going to go to bed if the Lord wills. He's not saying do that, but this is what he's saying. He's already referenced Jesus one time when he said, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth will speak. What he's saying is, in your heart should be a perspective that says, hey, God is a perspective that says that it says that we're not in control, that God is ultimately in control. So if you have this perspective going on, it's going to overflow into the way you speak. So when we realize that we're not in control, that it's not about me, when we realize that, if the Lord wills, it's going to be an automatic thing in our life. It's going to be something that comes out in the way we talk. It's going to come out in the way we live our lives and we act, because it's going to be deep-rooted into our hearts. We've discussed this life thing now. We've broke down our misconnection in how we perceive life. We realize now it's short, and that we've got to you know, get it prioritized and get it lined up. But there's also another problem, and that's the way we view God. We view God falsely, and he's going to correct that here. What's the proper view of God? Look at verse 15 again. If the Lord wills, we will live. So not only is our lives short, but God is the one that tells us when we're going to die. God knows. God's the one that ordains that and dictates that. So, God not only determines when you live, but he also determines when you die. And Paul understood that. Acts 18 says, I will return to you if God wills. 1 Corinthians says, I will come to you soon if the Lord wills. Paul went to city and city, and he was facing persecution and death each and every day, and he realized that he may not make it through the next day. So when he made plans, when he told people he was coming somewhere, he said, I'm going to come if the Lord wills. If the Lord allows me to do that, I'm going to come. If the Lord allows me to do this, I'm going to come. And that reality that we don't know when we're going to die and we have no control over that should humble us and realize that God is ultimately sovereign and in control. The second part of verse 15 says, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. So God not only ordains the end of our lives, but he also determines what we accomplish. So God not only, you know, we have a short life, and not only does God pick when we die, not only does he ordain when we live and when we die, but he also determines what we accomplish in life. And I know y'all have all heard this story, so I'm not going to go into it. Some of you may not have, but when I was in college, I was majoring in education, and I was going to be a baseball coach. That's all I wanted to do my entire life was be a baseball coach. I love baseball, still love baseball. That's all I wanted to do. That's what my plan was. I was going to get a degree in education, and I was going to be a high school baseball coach and work my way up, hopefully be a college baseball coach one day. That's what I wanted to do. And I was at Meridian my sophomore year, and some things happened with my family, and wind up I couldn't afford to go to school anymore, so I had to quit. I had to quit school, I had to get a job, and one thing led to another, and I'm here now. And I would not be here right now being a youth minister if I would have stayed in school. I don't believe I would have. That's just the way that the life I was living and the way I was heading. So I had this big plans for my life to be this baseball coach that was going to be like so epic and awesome. But instead, God humbled me and drug me through all this crisis really in my life to show me one thing, and that was that God determines what we get to do. He led me here. I didn't lead me here. I had completely different plans. His plans are the ones that matter. His plans are the one that's going to happen because God runs the show. You have what you have because of him. If we live our lives dismissing the sovereignty of God, if we live our lives dismissing the fact that he is in control, then we have a serious heart problem. And that's what, real quick, we're going to look at verse 16 and 17. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin. James is saying those who go through life and plan life out without taking God into consideration, and without giving him the credit that's due, and without saying you're sovereign over all, he's saying, guys, that's evil. It's arrogant, and not only is it evil and arrogant, but it's a sin. God has given us this very breath that we breathe right now, and for us to take that breath and not acknowledge that He is sovereign over all is a slap in the face to Him, and it's sin. So as we close, we need to ask one more question. How is any of this good news? So far, we've covered that we are not in control of our life and that we have no idea when we're going to die. We don't control when we live or when we die. So how is this good news? This is kind of a morbid thought. It's kind of a depressing thought. How can this be good news? Well, I'll tell you how it's going to be good news. It's because James's choice of word here. In the Greek, in Greek culture, there was a phrase that they used all the time that caught people's attention, and it was, if the gods will. If the gods will. And what they would do is like, you go into such and such, and they're, well, I will if the gods will. Gods, because you know they had multiple gods back. They believed in Zeus and all this stuff, and all those Hercules and Thor and all that kind of stuff. So, if the gods will, and James in the first verse of his letter clearly says that the Lord is Jesus Christ. And when he says here to these people, he says, "If the Lord wills, if the Lord wills." So that's singular. That's one. One authority, all authority, Jesus said, all authority is mine in, on heaven and on earth. And James is giving him credit because here's the thing. You don't have health unless the Lord wills it. You don't have money unless the Lord wills it. You don't have a home unless the Lord wills it. You don't have life. You don't have breath unless the Lord wills it. And that's what James is getting at here. You don't have control of any of your life. God controls it all. And if we're honest, that kind of scares some of us. And it all depends on the relationship you have with Jesus, on whether it scares you to the extent it scares you. Because it's scary saying, I may not wake up tomorrow. The fact that God controls life and death is scary. But it's scary unless we know the character of the one that's in charge of our lives. It's scary unless we know the character of the one that leads us in our lives. And that character of Jesus Christ, listen, he came to this earth and he was in his ministry, he was performing miracles, he was preaching, and this whole time he knew that he was face death. He knew that he had to die, and he knew that when he went to Jerusalem, that he had to die, that he was going to be persecuted, that he was going to be betrayed, he was going to be arrested, he was going to be beaten, and he was going to be crucified on a cross. He knew all that was coming. Yet he still set his face in stone toward Jerusalem and marched for you and for me. In the garden, when his flesh was crying out, saying, hey, you don't want to do this, you don't have to do this. His flesh was saying, you don't have to die for these people, you don't have to be crucified, you don't have to do this. And he said he was praying for you and for me, and no, still steadfast in stone. He says, no, I'm gonna walk. I'm gonna face death to overcome it for my people, so that they will have a chance. He had this character that would be betrayed by his best friend with a kiss. This character that would be denied by one of his other best friends three times. All of his other friends, his disciples, they just split and left and just left him just alone and all alone. Whenever he was all alone and vulnerable and facing facing death, looking at adversity, he could have said, nah, I don't have to do this. But no, still in his loneliness, he said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to die for you. I'm going to die for Scott. I'm going to die for Anna. I'm going to die for Stuart. I'm going to die for Trevor. I'm going to die for Abby and Maddie and James Hunter and Nathan and Leslie and Chris. The whole time he's sitting there alone, being beaten, being spit on, being mocked, being crucified, being killed, being murdered. The whole time, the character of our Savior said, I'm doing it for them. I'm doing it so they will have a way. So, the thing of it is, guys, sure, we may not control what happens tomorrow. We may not know. But the fact that the guy that does know went through all that, laid down his life, overcame death, and just the amount of love that he has for you should give you comfort to know that I'm not in control, but I know who's in control, and I can put my trust in Him. So when I plan things from now on, I'm going to plan it with God in mind. I'm going to plan it with the Lord's will in mind. I told you a story about Ben Stewart earlier, and as I close, I'm sure y'all are wondering how he turned out, since the last thing I told you, he couldn't use his legs. This is a quote out of his book. "After a month of lying on my back, the pain began to decrease. Strength began to return to my legs, and I was able to walk into my surgeon's office. He was shocked. Though not a Christian, he exclaimed, 'Someone up there must really like you, because I can't believe that you're walking.'" Then he said, "I do believe that someone up there likes me, but not because he gave me the ability to walk again. Though I am grateful, he gave me something even more amazing during the month on the floor. Without realizing it, I started to care too much about things that did not really matter, my reputation, my success, so on and so forth. I had falsely believed I could plan out my days. I began to care less about the things that truly mattered, like loving God and loving people. I now believe God put me on my back for this very reason, to return me to my senses. I don't want to waste a moment of my life obsessing about things that don't ultimately matter. Rather, I want to spend every second following my great King who gave his life for me and join him in loving others for his glory and their good. And if he wills, may we all live like this together." And that's, guys, what I want y'all to take away from this. You don't know what tomorrow's bringing. You don't know what's happening. I don't know what's happening tomorrow. But I pray that you're humble enough to realize that you're not invincible. You're not invincible. That's something teenagers often think that they are. I know when I was a teenager, I tried to add it up. I couldn't keep account, but there was, like, when I was in high school, I can remember like 15 or 20 actual different people that died when we were in high school. That was in my 4 years there, like 15 or 20 people that died at Ship Central. And some of it was accident kind of things, but a lot of it was stupid, careless behavior that led to their lives being taken. You're not invincible. Once you realize that, you realize that you're not invincible, and you realize that you know what? It could just easily be me drop dead tomorrow, as it is anybody else. I'm not trying to scare you into thinking, oh, I'm going to die tonight. That's not what I'm going at. I'm just letting you know that you have to be humble enough to know that this life is a gift, it's a blessing. The very fact that God cares enough to give you breath to breathe right now, if God wanted to, He would stop every single one's breath at one time in this whole world and wipe us all out if He really wanted to. He could. So the very fact that you're taking a breath, that all your organs are functioning, the blood's circulating like it's supposed to, that your eyes are open right now, that you're comprehending what I'm saying, that your eardrums are working, all this happening at one time, it's a gift from God, and He ordained every single bit of it. And just as easy as He ordained it, it could be all over. So I don't want to scare you, but I want you to know that life is short, and you need to realize that priorities do matter. That being the coolest person on campus, it's awesome. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you, that wouldn't be the coolest thing ever if you were the coolest person on campus. That's awesome. But ultimately, it's not going to matter in 10 years. You're not going to care. I can tell you right now, if you're the coolest person in high school, you're probably going to be a loser in college. That's just the way it is. You that are not as sociable in high school and don't feel like you fit in, when you get to college, you're going to flourish. That's just the way it happened. It's crazy. I went to school with so many people that were the big dog on campus. And we got to college, and they're like, I want to go back to high school. High school is not, it means a lot to you right now, but in 10 years, it's not going to mean that much. And in 20 years, college is not going to mean that much. I'm not saying flunk out. Work hard, get your grades up. But popularity and partying and success even, all that, it's overrated compared to what you can do for the kingdom of heaven. And that's what I want. I want this whole entire talk to be wrapped up into prioritize your life. It's short. Make time. Make use of your time here. And a lot of times it's just simple as we just need a perspective change. And we need to be led back to the cross. Because whenever you think about your popularity, when you think about all your struggles, when you think about everything in your life, when you think about your life in general, and you hold it up to the image of the cross casts a huge shadow over your problems. It casts a huge shadow over your ego. It casts a huge shadow over your life. So I want, as we stand and we're going to sing this song, I want you to ask God to lead you back to the cross so you can see the perspective and the fact of life's short. God, open my eyes, get my priorities right. Dear Father, I thank you for your word. God, I thank you for blessing us the way that you have. God, I pray that you would just lead us to the cross, God, and we can see the perspective of and view our lives correctly and view you correctly and view just the fact that we need to prioritize each and every day. We need to wake up and say, God, I pray for your will and not mine. God, I pray that we get out of our selfishness. We get out of our, I want this, I want that. And we worry about you and we worry about your will for our lives. And God, I pray if when we plan things, we plan it in the idea that you can change it at any time. If we're planning our college experiences, God, I pray that you would guide us and you would lead us. And I pray that we would, you know, as followers of you would look at it at the perspective of, if you will it, let it happen. And that we're so heavy in prayer that it's almost like you're just sitting there talking to us, that we just know exactly what we need to do. God, lead us back to the cross. Because when we get a view of the cross, when we see the perspective of the cross, and we view the character of the man who died for our sin, the character that laid on that cross and hung on that cross willingly, when we get that perspective, when we get led back to there and we can see that, we can finally say, you know what? I'm not in control. You are God, and I give you the glory for it. God, thank you again for being with us. God, I ask right now that you just break down walls, and God, you would just open up our hearts, God, and you would just speak and you would convict. In your name I pray. Amen.
For more information on Breakthrough Ministries, follow us on Twitter at BreakthroughMI or visit our blog at www.breakthroughministry.wordpress.com.